From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, I hope you had a great week, everyone, and we've got a great show ahead for you today. And we are in the month of May, so it's a great time to celebrate the Mother of God in this month. We've got a book that's been out from Marge Fenelon. She's an author of numerous Catholic books, but her newest book about Mary is called My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, and it's sort of a Marian pilgrimage across America. So we'll be excited to talk to her about some of those great shrines in the United States dedicated to Mary and those other places of miracles that have even been investigated by the Catholic Church. So we'll be excited to talk to Marge in just a little bit. We'll also be talking about a future saint like we like to do, Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. And her feast day is upon us, and so it's a perfect time to talk about her with Marie Oates from the Communications Department of Opus Dei. And we'll be talking about the path to sainthood of this saint and an incredible miraculous healing that was worked through her intercession. So we'll be excited to talk to Marie later in the show today. And we'll also be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project, like we always do. And we'll be looking at Our Lady of the Harbor from Clermont-Ferrand in France in the year 1614. And we'll be looking at the might-be saint of the day. We always try to talk about those people on the path to sainthood, and that connects well with my television program on EWTN that airs on Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Eastern or Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern. So for today's date, we have Blessed André Abelone from France as well. And with the question of the week, we've got a really good one today. Somebody wrote in asking, have there ever been sainthood miracles validated that have affected the healing of more than one person? So we'll be excited to try to get to the bottom of that as well. Let's take a look at the miracle news. Each week, we look at the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And if you check out my book, 365daywithmary.com, or check out that website or the book, or the Facebook page for 365 Days with Mary, you'll hear of many stories throughout Christian history of Marian icons that were saved from disaster. And of course, we have these famous cases like Częstochowa, where the icon was captured by Hussite raiders and slashed and thrown in a ravine, and then later recovered and became a symbol for an entire nation. But we have a similar kind of situation where we have a rescued icon in a Belarus church. There was a great fire there. And so the story says that a Marian icon revered by Catholics in Belarus was recovered undamaged on Tuesday following a fire at a church in the village where it has been venerated for centuries. And this is the icon of Our Lady of Butzlau, and it was found unscathed on the morning of May 11th in this blaze in the Church of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in this village of Butzlau, which geographically I think is about 90 miles north of the capital there of Minsk. And so various websites have reported that minutes after the smoke was seen billowing from the roof, the pastor Dmitry Dubovnik and volunteers entered the church and rescued the icon and the Blessed Sacrament both. And so the TV stations there in Belarus reported that the church's roof was destroyed in the blaze when firefighters battled for more than 4 hours, the cause unknown at this point. But the bishops of Belarus appealed to Catholics in the country following a visit to that site, supporting the reconstruction of that Baroque church, and it was the national sanctuary of the Mother of God of Butzlau. So that's one of the more famous devotions from that region, and you can find out more if you go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can find out more about this icon of Our Lady of Butzlau, which perhaps in miraculous circumstances escaped that fire. Let's take a look at Catholic pub trivia. We do this every week where we look at a trivia question that relates to a miracle, perhaps, or some other form of Catholic knowledge that you may or may not have. And so last week,
We talked about Fatima. It was a great interview. And so we asked a question last week related to Fatima. And the question was, which Fatima children were present at the very first apparitions of the Angel of Portugal in 1915? Now, most people don't know this this factoid, but we always think that it was the main three visionaries of Fatima all the way through the visions of the Angel of Portugal and all the way through the visions of Mary starting on May 13th, 1917. But believe it or not, in 1916, there was an angel that appeared to Lucia and two other girls, not the children of Fatima that we know as canonized saints now, Saint Jacinto and Francisco. And so Lucia Fatima was the only one who was present for the Angel of Fatima in 1915. In 1916, that angel appeared again in the set of three visionaries that we all come to know and love were together for that one. So people who wrote in with the answer of one, Lucia, were correct. And so this was one of the strange and interesting aspects of Fatima, this angel who appeared in 1915 and did not transmit any messages in that event. So this week we have a question about a saint, and that is a sainthood miracle from the United States. What patron saint of Colombia had his canonization miracle in St. Louis in the United States in 1864, the first ever American miracle ever approved by Rome? So that question is, what patron saint of Colombia had his canonization miracle in St. Louis in the United States in 1864, which turned out to be the first ever occurring American miracle ever approved by the Vatican? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and send in your answer. And the fastest respondent with the right answer is going to win that prize, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with author Marge Fenelon about her book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. This is the month of May, the month of Mary. So it's a great time to talk about our Blessed Mother and how we can reconnect with her and grow further in our knowledge and love of the Virgin Mary. And there's a book that's out that I really enjoyed because I think, you know, when it comes to Marian shrines or Marian devotions, it's always nice to be able to visit these places in person. In this past year, with coronavirus and otherwise, we've felt very locked down and haven't traveled much. But there's a book out that's called My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America. And it's a great book by Marge Fenelon that looks at these different places of shrines dedicated to the Virgin Mary across the United States. And so people can travel to these places and find out more, or they can sort of connect by reading the book and finding out more about each of these places and their significance to the United States and for people's lives of faith. So we're so excited today to welcome back to the show Marge Fenelon.
So great to be back. I am super excited, especially now, as you're saying, the month of Mary, and we're looking toward perhaps the ability to travel a little more, at least to go to visit some of these shrines where we have so much of our American history invested in these shrines. This is why I picked the nine that I did for this book. But then also the amazing things that our Blessed Mother has done right here in our own country, our own land, the beautiful, miraculous, and spiritual gift that she's given us, and most people don't even realize. And that's why, that's the feedback I'm getting from the book. That's why I am so happy to promote it, not for the sake of the book, but for the sake of what our Blessed Mother is doing in all of these places.
Absolutely. So this is a fun book for me. I actually love shrines and visiting shrines and seeing the way that people have honored with architecture their devotion to the Virgin Mary and otherwise and other saints throughout the United States. And we often think of Europe when we think of these great shrines, and that we'd have to make a big big trip, pay a lot of money, take time out of our schedule to go to see these fantastic places. But there are places here in the United States as well that are worth going on pilgrimage. Well, tell us a little bit, what were some of your favorite places that when you researched for this book?
Oh, dear me. I get asked that question so often. And it's this is not a cop-out. It's the truth. They're all my favorite for a different reason. So I tend to be a very amateur history buff. So that was for me, that was the icing on the cake, because some of our American history is intertwined with the history of these shrines. So for example, Our Lady of La Leche in St. Augustine, Florida, that's the site of the first Catholic Mass ever on United States soil. So 1531, I have to go back and remember my dates. There are so many. But that in itself, when our land met the Eucharist for the first time, just incredible. So for me, that's the one that I think of first when I think about this book. But others, there are stories of peoples, immigrants who have come here who struggled against the odds, meaning, you know, our land was not very well developed at one time. That may surprise us as we look around us, but these folks came to create a better life for themselves, to become part of this country, citizens of the United States, and bring with them their heritage. And in the process, of course, part of their heritage was devotion to our Blessed Mother. So we have, I would say, nearly all of the shrines that I visited in one way or another have a rich cultural history behind them in the people that fostered that faith and made those shrines become reality. So there's also Our Lady of Prompt Succor in New Orleans. Now, although the roots there are French, it's very much a part of our American history, because the Battle of New Orleans was, if you look this up, it was the odds were stacked vastly against our United States forces. The victory for that battle is credited to the nuns at the Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor, the Ursulines, who prayed for victory. Primarily, it wasn't like let's conquer the world kind of victory, but the city of New Orleans was about to be burned down and taken to the ground, which meant churches and homes, and you can imagine the devastation. And so the Ursuline nuns prayed for safety, for victory for the United States forces, and the victory was won in a remarkable amount of time, very short period of time. And even Andrew Jackson, who was not a believer, had to admit that there had to have been, he called it a divine juxtaposition, so a divine intervention in the fact that they were able to win the victory of that battle. And he even went afterwards to personally thank the nuns, and they actually had a celebration dinner there at the convent, which was actually a cloister, but they made arrangements that this could be possible. So it's a miracle, and that took place here on our soil, and is part of the fabric of our history and culture. A lot of people don't know these things. This is why I had to do the book. I had to go see these places for myself and bring them alive to others, for others.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Marge Fenelon about her book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, and this is a Marian pilgrimage across America. And you mentioned two places of miracles, the Our Lady of La Leche there in Florida. Many childless couples looking to conceive will go there and pray in front of that statue. And there are so many stories that the shrine even keeps track of that documents this miraculous intercession. And then, you know, Our Lady of Prompt Succor that you mentioned in New Orleans is one of the very few canonically crowned Marian statues in the United States itself, because of those two great miracles, the Thayer miracle and also the Battle of New Orleans. So two great places on the East Coast for people to visit. Now, what about on the West Coast? I know there are some great Marian statues and shrines out West. What did you see when you traveled there?
I would have to say, looking West, My personal favorite is Our Lady of Peace Shrine in Santa Clara, California. And the reason that I just so love this place is, and I consider it the geographical positioning of this shrine to be the miracle. You know, it wasn't like a healing per se, although this shrine, well, let me tell you where it's located. It's in the center of Silicon Valley, and the main component of the shrine is this three-story high statue of Our Blessed Mother, stainless steel. It is just gorgeous. You know, you imagine a metal image of Mary not being very attractive, but it is so beautifully done. And she is standing there in the middle of all these large big tech companies, ones some that have their reputations lately questioned because of things that the censorship and so on. But she's standing right in the middle of this technology capital of our country, as if to say, nope, you don't win. I am here. I'm not going anywhere, and I'm staying here. And for me, that is the miraculous aspect of that shrine, because not only is that statue, I mean, you can't help. I can imagine now, I wasn't in any of those buildings, but I certainly stood by the statue and looked around and saw all the big names on the buildings around me. I can very well imagine that you could look out any of those windows of those buildings and see Our Blessed Mother right there. More than her presence in that statue is the incredible fervency of what's happening there in that parish, because they have 24/7 Eucharistic adoration, and it is packed.
I attended Stanford University there in the Bay Area, so driving to work there and back after graduation, I remember seeing that statue glistening in the sun. It's quite a remarkable sight. And we've been talking today with Marge Fenelon about her book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, Marian Pilgrimage Across the United States of America. And other shrines in the United States that have always had an appeal to me as one in Champion, Wisconsin. Wisconsin itself has three major shrines, Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, and also Our Lady Help of Christians as well is up there. So they have three major shrines, but the one in Champion, Wisconsin is one that is the only place in the United States where there's a validated case of a Marian apparition happening in 1859, received by Sister Adele Bryce there, a Belgian farm worker who was 28 years old. So that is another remarkable place that people, if they haven't been there, that they need to see. What struck you about the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help?
What struck me is that it is the inconspicuousness of the shrine itself. So what I mean by that is it is surrounded by farmland. And the first time I'm only 2 hours south of there. So the first time I drove there, I'm expecting some kind of, you know, most of the other shrines, there's a town right around it or some such where you really see signs of growing civilization. And as I'm driving, I'm thinking, what, did I take a wrong turn? Like, this is, I'm like going way out in the country. But that's the beauty of it, you see, Michael, because you have this shrine where Our Blessed Mother appeared to Sister Adele Bryce with a very important message for our country, and it maintains its small town atmosphere. It's a very, even though they've developed the property, they've done so in a way where the integrity is still maintained and peacefulness. Everyone I have spoken to who has been there, people that I interviewed about that shrine, they will say the same thing unprompted. The sense of peace as soon as you enter the property of that shrine. And I've experienced that myself. No matter what's going on in my life, all I have to do is go there, and it all calms down. It is astounding. And when you go down into the oratory beneath the apparition oratory, which is actually underground, under the main chapel, because that's where the spot of that Our Lady appeared. When you for me and for so many others, you can feel her presence there. It's not striking. It doesn't grab you by the collar, but you feel her presence there. It is, oh, I absolutely encourage our listeners, if there's any possible way to visit that shrine, please do so, because you will experience something like you've never experienced before.
Absolutely. That is one of my favorite shrines, and they have this great Walk to Mary event where they do this giant walking pilgrimage there every year, and they celebrate the feast day and the miracle of the fire that that had happened 12 years to the date of the Marian apparition in 1871. They have a big event every year that honors that event. So I encourage people to check that out. And speaking of Our Lady of Good Help, I know that you are working on a new book that will be out shortly or at some point in the near future that's covers the story of Our Lady of Good Help. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, I could go on for hours. I'm so thrilled to have been asked to do this book. The title, and I'm pretty sure we're going to stay with this title, America's Mary, the Story of Our Lady of Good Help. And it's literally just that. It's the story, what happened, who were the people involved. I've gone into the culture of the Belgian people, because that's very helpful in understanding how this all unraveled, the apparitions, the message, very, very important. So it's a very detailed account, not just of the apparition itself, but all of the happenings leading up to it, including the Great Fire, which you're right, is an astounding miracle that land was preserved in the midst of these fire tornadoes, and then coming all the way up to the present day, where I touch upon the possible meaning of Our Blessed Mother's message to Adele Bryce, but for not only then, but for today. Because, as you know, so many, I would say every time Our Blessed Mother has appeared, that message is not only for the people in that time and place, but for all time. And so I believe firmly that we need to be paying attention to this, and then also the possible impact for our future, that we need to look at this message, especially since it was on our own land, right here in our own country. So I'm very, very pumped about this book coming out. People need to know about it. Way too many people, when I mention Our Lady of Good Help and the apparition, their jaws dropped. They had no idea that there was an approved Marian apparition on our U.S. soil.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And people need to get to know Our Lady of Good Help. And one way they can do that is they can pick up your book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America, because you dedicate an entire chapter to that wonderful shrine right there outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Well, we're so grateful to you, Marge Fenelon, for joining us on today's program. And we look forward to talking to you in the future when that book on Our Lady of Good Help hits the store. So we'll be in touch. So thank you so much, Marge Fenelon, for joining us on today's program.
You are so welcome.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I really like when I travel around the country and give presentations, whether it's to parishes or to conferences or otherwise, where we give a presentation. And then at the very end, people, it seems like they have had a lifetime of stored up questions about miracles because the answers aren't really out there. And so I always enjoy staying a little bit extra and talking to people about their questions regarding the supernatural. And so this past week, when we opened up the mailbag, I had a question that was one of the better ones that I've ever gotten. And in recent weeks, we've had some really good questions. So keep them coming. Send them to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or go through the website at miraclehunter.com, and you can send me a message, and I'll be answering another question. Perhaps it's yours on the show next week. And so the question from Timothy is, throughout the long history of canonization and the requirement for miracles, has any canonization been granted on a basis of miracles not related to cures of disease or other infirmity affecting specific individual human beings. Jesus carried out 37 miracles on earth, 23 or so related to healing the sick, even resurrecting the dead. However, he also changed water into wine, his very first miracle, turned a few loaves of bread and fish into thousands, stilled a storm, and much more. Are we selfish when we pray for one person's cure? Should we pray for a candidate's intercession to miraculously place 50,000 bottles of oxygen in New Delhi, India during the coronavirus? To miraculously rid the oceans of plastic pollution? To miraculously cleanse the atmosphere of carbon dioxide? To stop a hurricane dead in its tracks? Thanks so much. There's a question from Tim. That's a great question, Tim. It seems like there are perhaps big things we could pray for and we could ask the saints to intercede for. And traditionally, however, we have always sought the saints to help out in medical miracles or other personal types of miracles. And why is that? Why do we focus, perhaps selfishly, as you might point out, on just ourselves or just our loved ones? Why not the bigger ones? Well, when it comes to canonization causes and the search for miracles, the only reason at all that they look at miracles beyond looking at the life of heroic virtue of the future saint is to establish that that person is in heaven with God interceding for us on earth. And in order to do that, we say we want to find verifiable miracles. And so when it comes to praying that a hurricane might divert or that pollution might be lessened, or that more oxygen might be delivered to a country suffering tremendously from coronavirus, more ventilators perhaps. And so these perhaps would not be able to be validated by Rome and used in a canonization cause. There are many miracles, let's say, for Padre Pio that have happened after his canonization, but Rome doesn't even look at those. There's not even an investigative process or a committee or even proposing them to Rome to be looked at. That when that person's a saint, they're just prayed to and hoping that they might intercede. So we might continue to pray for these big miracles from saints like Padre Pio. But when it comes to the intercessory miracles, they want to find these very specific cases, much smaller cases, as you might point out, of healing miracles where they have a disease that's documented, locked tight. They have the x-rays or the MRIs or the blood tests or whatever it is that actually documents that that is a true condition, serious condition that needs healing. And then after the miracle takes place, they need the documentation of a similar sort that verifies that the condition has been resolved. So they really need to have the before and after. And the more focused it is, the better. So that is such a great question. But I do have some interesting facts for you. You question whether there's ever been a miracle related to somebody or to a larger group than just one person. And I have two examples for you. One such case involved food multiplication. In Extremadura, Spain, there were poor families and orphaned children who would come to this Ribera del Fresno parish hall each evening for a meal. And on January 25th, 1949, it became clear to the people who were delivering the food or making the food available that there wouldn't be enough for everyone, with less than a pound and a half of meat and rice available. And so the cook, he actually prayed in desperation to Blessed John Macias, who lived until 1645 and was from that area in Spain and had cared for the poor there. And 22 people had testified that the pot began overflowing after the prayers, and the cook needed two more pots to hold the extra. And over the course of 4 hours, the food kept coming, with over 200 people being fed completely. So that was a miracle that affected a large group of people that was used for canonization. Now, another non-medical miracle case is attributed to Blessed Irina Stefani. She was an Italian nun given the name Sister Niatha, Mother of Mercy, by the Kenyan people that she served in hospitals there. And she was beatified in 2015 by Pope Francis with a miracle involving a holy water font that was kept refilling in a parish church in Mozambique in 1989. It was the only source of water for a group of refugees, catechists, in fact, who were hiding out from warring liberation armies. They were hiding in the church, and they had no other water, but the holy water font kept refilling miraculously. And this was a miracle used for the canonization there. So here are two examples that you're looking for. They're not as big as a hurricane diverting or other big cures or changes to society in general. But you can see that on a couple rare occasions, they've approved miracles that have affected more than one person. So thank you, Tim, for that question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or visit my website, miraclehunter.com. You can send me a message there. Now let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary. This is a project that we do every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the week as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or February 11th, Lourdes, or December 12th, Our Lady of Guadalupe. But believe it or not, there's a different other Marian apparition or miracle or feast day that lines up to each and every day of the calendar year. And so for today's date, we've got Our Lady of the Harbor in Clermont-Ferrand in France in the year 1614. The story goes that continuous snow from November to Easter froze the region of Clermont-Ferrand in 1614. And the famine coming around the corner in this barren time of year in May, the town decided to process in the streets a wooden statue of Our Lady of the Port, and followed a prayerful crowd of over 8,000 people on Ascension Day on May 15th, 1614. Starting the very next day, the weather turned warm, and the door was opened for a successful harvest. And after an inquiry by the bishop on May 6th, 1616, he declared that the feast of Notre Dame de Port would be celebrated on May 15th. The coronation of the statue occurred in a ceremony in 1875, and on May 15th, 1881, Pope Leo XII declared the church a minor basilica. And that's Our Lady of the Harbor in Clermont-Ferrand in France in 1614. For more information on this fascinating miracle, or any of the other hundreds of Marian devotions throughout the world, you can connect to the website 365daywithdayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, 365 Days with Mary. You can download the app, 365 Days with Mary, from the iOS App Store. Or you can join the Facebook feed with over 10,000 followers and get a Marian devotion a day in your Facebook feed. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day and the sainthood news. We do this every week where we sort of connect to my television program on EWTN, and that's called They Might Be Saints. It airs every single week on Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Eastern or Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern. And so we're always trying to keep up to date on the sainthood news. And we talk about from miracle workers to martyrs, those ordinary people who live extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people we look at who might be saints. And so just last month, at the end of last month, Pope Francis authorized the decree regarding several new candidates for sainthood. And as he does, he will authorize the Congregation for the Causes of Saints there in the Vatican to promulgate decrees considering the Italian religious and martyrdom of 12 individuals, heroic virtues of three lay people as well. So Pope Francis received in the audience Cardinal Semeraro. He's the prefect of the Congregation for the Cause of Saints. And during this private audience, the Holy Father confirmed the conclusions of the ordinary session of the cardinals and bishops, members of the congregation, and declared to extend to the Universal Church and the cult of the Blessed Margaret of Città Castello cause, the Third Order of St. Dominic, born around 1287. So that was a case of equipollent or equivalent canonization that we've talked about on the show before. Now, during this very same audience, the Pope also authorized the congregation to promulgate the decrees regarding the martyrdom of the servants of God, Vincente Nicasio Renuncio Toribio, and 11 of his companions in the Congregation of the Most Holy Redeemer. They were killed out of hatred of the faith in Madrid and Spain in 1936. And the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Pietro Marcellino Cordini, he's the Bishop of Frascati. He's a cardinal of the Holy Roman Church, founder of the Congregation for the Collegiate Sisters of the Holy Family. He was also declared venerable. Also finding the heroic virtues in Emmanuel Stabium, professed religious of the Congregation for the Sons of the Immaculate Conception, and also the servant of God, Maria de los Desamparados, Portilla Crespo, and also Anfrosino Berardi. He was a layperson born in 1920 and in Italy, and he died there in 1933. So that's the full rundown of the saints going on around the world that Pope Francis has recognized, and we'll be staying tuned to see what happens next in the next month or so when Pope Francis will announce a new set of saints in the Catholic Church. Now let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this every week where we look at the people along the path to sainthood. And those who listen to the show know that we talk about this a lot, and we're talking about those four main steps of sainthood. That's the servant of God, venerable, where their heroic virtue is validated, blessed, where the first miracle is found, and saint, where the second miracle is validated. And so for today's show, we've got May 15th as the feast day. We've got Blessed André Abelone, who was born in 1375 in Provence in France. Now, Blessed André, in his youth, he got to listen to the preaching of St. Vincent Ferrer, and he joined the Dominicans at the St. Maximin Monastery. He became a priest, and he was a prior of the St. Mary Magdalene Monastery there in Provence, France, and he became a noted pilgrimage site. And tradition says that it is one of the places where St. Mary Magdalene went after the crucifixion, and the monastery has her relics there. Now, different missionaries preached home missions along with Blessed André Abelone, and he was noted for being an artist in his day, and he was known for different illuminations that they would do of manuscripts and biblical translations. And he died on May 15th, 1450, hence his feast day on May 15th. He died in Provence of natural causes, and he's buried there at the Church of St. Magdalene, and his tomb became known as a site of many, many miraculous cures. And he was beatified in the 1900s, 1902 to be exact, by Pope Leo XII when his cult was confirmed. And so that is Blessed André Abelone from France, the might-be saint of the day. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Marie Oates about Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz, a chemist who is now beatified and on the path to becoming a saint. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk a lot about saints and future saints on this program. You might be familiar with the program, They Might Be Saints, which airs weekly, Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern and Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. And we feature those people on the path to canonization. And of course, that's going from servant of God to venerable to blessed and then saint. And so there was somebody who was beatified just, I think, in 2019 that many people, it caught the attention of many people because this was a chemist and member of Opus Dei, the personal prelature of Opus Dei. And she's the very first female member of the work to ever be beatified or canonized. So we're so excited today with her feast day upon us, talking about Guadalupe Ortiz. And we're speaking today with Marie Oates. Welcome to the show today, Marie.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you back. And you are a member of the Communications Department for Opus Dei in the United States. And so getting the word out on these future saints and these people who have lived lives of heroic virtue who have been members of Opus Dei, I'm sure, is part of what you see as your work or your job, to tell the stories of these great saints who are inspirations to people around the world. And what I particularly get excited about is we hear these stories throughout the centuries of perhaps they are saints in far-off places. They are priests or they are nuns or bishops or otherwise. And then we sort of put them in another category, saying we could never be that kind of person. We could never be that saint because we haven't received holy orders. We haven't entered a convent. But we have somebody like Guadalupe Ortiz, who was just a regular person like any of us. She was a chemist and a laywoman. Talk a little bit about the importance of somebody like Guadalupe Ortiz being elevated to being a blessed.
So for Opus Dei, which is made up of lay people, and then there's a small percentage who are priests who serve that population, Guadalupe is wonderful. She's an example of the goal of our mission. And most people in Opus Dei most likely will not reach the altars, that is, be beatified or canonized. That's a very special process. It can't happen to everybody. I think we like to think there's many more saints and blesseds than just those who are declared by the church. But it's wonderful that the church has that process and gives us these role models. And the spirit of Opus Dei is essentially reminding people that all people, you know, all individuals are called to holiness.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Marie Oates, working in communications for Opus Dei in the United States. And we're talking today about Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz, a person who can set an example for us with her life of virtue, just living in the ordinary world. And let's talk a little bit about her background. What's fascinating to me and a lot of people is she was actually a chemist. She worked in chemistry, and that was her profession. And we don't have many scientist saints out there, but she's one of them. Talk a little bit about how she sanctified her work of chemistry and how that led her to on this path of sainthood.
Sure. I think it's worth noting as we discuss her professional path, that St. Jose Maria was, as the founder of Opus Dei and is trying to communicate this message he received from God to help remind people that all people are called to sanctity, he was really a trailblazer back in the late 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, in that he advocated for not just all people to find God in their professional work, but also that women are called to all professional works. And we may take that for granted right now, but this was radical at the time that he was advocating quite strongly, and you can see it in his writings, that women were called to all professions. And I think Guadalupe is another wonderful example in that regard. She was also an outlier, so early on, she chose to go to university. That was a very unusual thing back in the 1930s in Madrid. She was one of a small group of women who entered the chemistry program. And then she would later pursue a graduate degree so she could teach at the college level. That was very unusual, you know, and so she found God in her experiments. She found God in her chemistry. She did more than her chemistry, though. She also, as a member of Opus Dei, she put herself at the service of Opus Dei in those early years. So for a period of time, she put aside some of her professional work, particularly in chemistry, and helped expand the apostolates of Opus Dei. So she helped start a student residence in Spain. She helped start some other programs. Then she was asked by St. Jose Maria to help spread the message of Opus Dei in Mexico. So she helped establish the Apostolic Works of Opus Dei in Mexico. There she helped found, among other things, a famous conference center. She worked with the poor there, helped establish some clinics, some training programs. Then she would go on to help in Rome for a short period of time with the founder of Opus Dei, St. Jose Maria. And then she returned to Madrid. She finished her PhD study. She took them up again. And then she would enter, you know, her life teaching chemistry. So, everything was, and all those things were things that she sanctified. She lived the spirit of Opus Dei. So she tried to offer all that work, even though for a period of time, it wasn't her initial selected field of chemistry. I think this is also inspirational to many women who sometimes have to take a break or dial back their professional work to help raise their children. I think that she serves as an inspiration in that regard because it's a very similar thing what she did, even though she was a celibate member of Opus Dei. The vocation of Opus Dei is actually the same. Most of the people in Opus Dei are married and they live the spirit, but there's a fraction who are called to apostolic celibacy and they give themselves to be able to sort of help expand the apostolates and be at greater service, to the apostolates of Opus Dei in an organized way. But as I was saying, the fact that she sort of took a break and took these detours professionally and did these other things, not a problem. She continued to live the spirit of Opus Dei and sanctify those things. And it's the same with many, you know, working mothers and others when you have to just sort of, maybe it's you're not a working mother, maybe it's your adult parents now and you have to sort of take a break or take a different path to care for them. All of those things can be offered to God. All of those things required, you know, are working and different interactions, and we can find God there. He's waiting for us. You know, if we have this sense of God's presence, and we just say, God, I'm going to do this with you. It's really a question of trying to find ways to stay in the zone, to stay in the presence of God, to realize that God is our loving Father, and that Jesus, the second person of the Blessed Trinity, is, you know, by our side. He's human nature. He has a human nature too. He understands us. He wants to be with us as we carry out our ordinary tasks.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Marie Oates from the Communication Department of Opus Dei in the United States. And when we talk about Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz or any blessed or venerable or saint, there's always the focus on what did they do that we can emulate. And so when we talk about somebody being named a venerable, the step before blessed, the life of heroic virtue has to be identified and documented in this giant book, the Positio, and then it's sent to Rome, and they really do testimonies and interviews and the whole deal, and they validate that person lived this special life of virtue. What, in your opinion, were the virtues of Guadalupe Ortiz that were noted and that we can try to emulate?
I think one of the things when you read her life or you read, accounts of other people, I actually have met people that knew her personally. She had an incredible cheerfulness. So she was someone who just was cheerful. She had her battles. She was normal. I have already alluded to that she had to struggle with her defects. We all do. But she had an incredible sense of humor and a cheerfulness that was just ongoing. And, you know, there's a question people in Opus Dei consider every week. We receive different helps, you know, to try to live in the presence of God. And we have this weekly called a means of formation, a circle. It's a sort of a brief class. But there's always a list of questions that we sort of ask ourselves. And the last question is, have I always worked with the joy of one who knows she's a daughter of God? And when I think of that question, and I think of it at least weekly, I should think about it more often, I think of Blessed Guadalupe, because she, when I've read her letters to a saint and some of the different accounts of her, I think she's someone who had a tremendous sense that God loved her, and that this is what fueled, in my mind, her joy. And it just comes out in her writing somehow that she has this tremendous sense that God loves her unconditionally. I believe God does love us unconditionally. I have a strong faith in that. I believe that. I don't know that I always feel that or that that's always the wind in my sails. And yet, when I think of Blessed Guadalupe, I think that was the wind in her sails. I mean, this woman was indefatigable with her dedication, with her cheerfulness, with her apostolic spirit. She was just so focused on doing good and doing God's will that anything else was just very secondary. And so when I think of, you know, what stands out, it's that cheerfulness. It's that, and I don't know if you can call, maybe it's a gift that she had, but she certainly, if it was a gift, she reciprocated and she cultivated it, this sense of being a child of God and being just loved unconditionally. And it's just, that's for me, one of the most important areas where she gives an example as a blessed, as a saint. Because if we all knew how much God loved us and we walked around with this tremendous sense of like, God just loves me unconditionally. I am wonderful, even though I'm a creature and I have defects and whatever, the world would just be such a better place. I mean, you know, and if we viewed other people realizing they're loved in that way, you know, there'd just be so much less mess and discrimination and violence. And, you know, we just would, I think, have greater regard for other people, for creation, and we'd have this sense of, like, everything's a gift. I just need to be grateful and accept it.
That's right. And we've been talking today with Marie Oates from Opus Dei about the first lay member of Opus Dei to be canonized, first female in Opus Dei, and that's Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. And with every beatification process, there's the identification of a miracle, and it's no different for Blessed Guadalupe. There was a great healing miracle that was attributed to her intercession. Tell us a little bit about the miracle that led her along this path to being declared a blessed.
Sure. So the miracle happened to Antonio Jesus Sedano. He was 76 years old, widowed since 1991, and it was during the summer of 2002 that he received this. He discovered that he had a wound on the skin of the inner corner of his right eye. And then when he went to see, his children were concerned. When he went to see a doctor, they realized that it was cancerous. It was, and many times they thought it was also malignant. And so he was going to have this surgery. This caused him tremendous anxiety, and he was upset. And so he used to go to Mass regularly at the chapel where there were the Holy Mary of Benagua in Barcelona. He went there, and he saw a prayer card to the servant of God, Guadalupe Ortiz. And so he thought, I'm gonna pray to her. I'm gonna ask her. He felt a sort of spiritual closeness to her for some reason. And so he did, but you know, he was praying over, I believe it was a period of weeks. And then, you know, he was just about to have the surgery, and he was really experiencing anxiety. He was just like devastated that he was going to have this. So he prayed to her, and he said, "You can do it. Make it so that I don't need to be operated. It's nothing for you." He kind of like pleaded with her. So then after he did that prayer, this is after praying to her a number of times, he calmed down and he slept without interruptions, which was unusual. And then he woke up the next morning, rested. He looked in the mirror and it was gone. And he realized that she had done this miracle. And he, you know, his children said, "Yes, it looks like this is incredible, Dad. The tumor has disappeared." And then he went to see the plastic surgeon who examined him, and he confirmed that the cancer had completely disappeared due to unknown causes.
That's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that miracle with us. We've been talking today with Marie Oates from Opus Dei, talking about Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. And we look forward to her being declared a saint someday. Is there any movement on the cause at this point, or are people still celebrating the big beatification and looking at her life going forward?
I think that everybody continues to celebrate. I think a lot of people, there's been an increase in people's you know, devotion to her in seeking out her intercession through the prayer card. So I have no doubt that one day she will be canonized, because already prior to her beatification, many people were asking her to intercede for them. And now it's just with her beatification, many more people have devotion to her.
That's right. It's something to pray for. People can go to the website, opusdei.org, to find out more about the life of Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. We're so grateful to you, Marie Oates, for joining us on today's program and talking to us about a great saint in Opus Dei, a future saint, that is Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. Thanks for joining us on today's show.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
God bless. That was Marie Oates from Opus Dei talking about Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. Go to opusdei.org. To find out more information about this great future saint. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guests, Marge Fenelon and Marie Oates, talking about Blessed Guadalupe Ortiz. I don't know about you, but I'm looking to get out of this country for a little bit. This lockdown has made me want to travel. And thankfully, we've got a trip coming up in October. And good news, several pilgrims signed up even this last week to join me on this trip. October 18th through 27th, I'll be taking a pilgrimage to the Marian Shrines of France, including Pontmain, which is celebrating its 2021 150th anniversary, and La Salette, celebrating its 175th anniversary of the apparitions there. And, of course, we'll be going to the famous sites of Lourdes in Paris to see the miraculous medal site, and going to Lourdes and other places. And people can stay on to go to Fatima, actually. That's an option at the end of this trip. And so you can go to nativitypilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to sign up and find out more. And sign up for the Miracle Hunter newsletter on miraclehunter.com for more information on miracle stories, where I'll be speaking next, upcoming book releases, and more. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter. where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.